You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Dr. Berhanu Nega, an Ethiopian political activist, was a prisoner of conscience in an Addis Ababa jail for almost 2 years before his release earlier this summer. Dr. Nega is a leading member of the CUD, Ethiopia's main opposition party. He's also an economics professor, and he joins me for the first part of today's Underreported to give us a first-hand look at the Ethiopian government's heavy-handed suppression of political dissent. Dr. Nega, it's an honor to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Mr. Lopate.
How did you wind up in prison?
Well, actually, we wind up in prison because we won an election that the government doesn't approve of. Of course,
when you say we, you mean your whole party.
Yeah, the in 2005 there was an election considered to be reasonably free by many standards. The government, because of a lot of pressure, both internally and externally, has to open up the political process a little bit. But I don't think they were ready that they would lose a free election. And what happened actually is that they essentially lost the election, and they were mad. So they think that the only way to stay in power is through repression and force.
And you were elected mayor of Addis Ababa?
Yes, by about 80% of the vote.
Now, what they said, that was a tainted election.
It was a tainted election because it was a tainted election, not the Addis Ababa election. It was a tainted election overall because the government, in fact, during the day of the election, the night of the election, before the vote count was even finished, the prime minister went out and declared a state of emergency. And the next day, the ruling party declared victory over all the constituencies, although over 50% of the votes were not even counted by then. Since, after that, it was all downhill, really.
Earlier this year, Parade magazine named Prime Minister Meles Zenawi one of the worst dictators in the world. Is he that bad?
Oh, he's actually very bad. I mean, especially now, since 2005, what we essentially have is a one-man dictatorship, and it's a dictatorship that does not have any moral qualms to do whatever is necessary to stay in power, including literally destroying the institutions of the country, such as the judiciary.
But when Mengistu fell, the last dictator, there was real hope for democracy, and wasn't a new constitution installed into the country, which allowed for elections?
Oh, certainly. That's why this whole affair is sad. I mean, Prime Minister Meles's party has fought supposedly against dictatorship, and they claim they will usher in a democratic political order. It's now 15 years, and they are not ready to relinquish power through the votes. That's a problem.
You've lived in exile for part of your life because of the complicated political situation in the country?
Yeah, I left the country during the Derg period, during Mengistu's period, because it was a very repressive regime that, among other things, have also killed my sister. I have to leave the country. I actually fought that government and left because there was no other option. So when I went back, I was hoping that there would be, for a change, a democratic political order, and I will participate in building that tattered country.
Didn't people die during the protests that followed the 2005 elections?
Oh, yes. By the official commission that was established by the government, at least 193 people, civilians, were killed in Addis Ababa alone, and a lot more people were killed all over the country.
How many were arrested?
Oh, the numbers vary, but it ranges between 50,000 and some even estimate that to be about 100,000. Really, a lot of people were incarcerated. I don't think there was ever a time in Ethiopian history where such a large number of people were incarcerated at one time.
Although I'm assuming that most of them have been released since.
Yes. Most of them have been released. The main leadership of the CUD, which I belong, were arrested, of course, following the protests, and we were released about 2 months ago.
And why were you released?
Well, it depends upon how you look at the situation. I mean, we have been discussing through some local elders to hopefully resolve the political impasse through dialogue and discussion with the government, because that's what we stand for. I mean, we don't believe that the country would benefit through conflict. Therefore, we have been asking for a return to democratic political order, a return to the pre-2005 arrangement, at least in terms of opening up the political space, what have you, through negotiations. The government seems to be interested in that, but it has at least more or less reneged on everything that we have discussed there. Then one wonders why then they released us. I really, honestly, I'm not clear as to why they released us now.
Did they assume that you would go into exile after you were released?
No. I mean, at least the statement that the government put out says that our political rights will be reinstated, although it doesn't mean, although I don't know what it means to reinstate our political rights, because it's not clear whether the basic rights and freedoms of citizens will be respected by this government, such as freedom of assembly, freedom of peaceful protest, and what have you. That is not clear. So we still have to hear from the government what its intentions are.
But at least on paper, you've been cleared of all charges. What were you charged?
No. We were actually. That's what's funny. I mean, initially when the discussions were taking place with the elders, the government said that it would. You know, cancel all the charges and we'll go back to the political process. But
and you just lost 2 years of your life.
But they followed. They followed it by actually sentencing us. We were sentenced life in prison, and all of a sudden they said, "Well, they are going to pardon us." So I mean, even the most basic aspect of the agreement was completely reneged. So
after the protest, did you expect to become be arrested? Did they come to your home and just peacefully take you off to prison?
Oh, they arrested me actually from the street. I mean, you must understand, in fact, for 6 months prior to our arrest, we have been followed by, security thugs everywhere we go for 6 months immediately following the election. So it was not very difficult to arrest us. I mean, they picked me up when they decided from the streets, actually, because there were three security cars with something like 8-9 agents following me wherever I go during that whole period.
My guest is Dr. Berhanu Nega, who is a leading member of the CUD, Ethiopia's main opposition party, released just this past July from prison after spending 2 years. What were the conditions like in prison?
Well, I mean, I don't know if there is any comfortable region, prison anywhere in the world, but the one in Ethiopia, partly because of the poverty of the country, is of course much more miserable than the other places. But we survived. I mean,
but you did have health problems, didn't you?
I did. One of the cells that they put me in had something like 300 inmates in one room, which was extremely suffocated, and I had some problem breathing because of lack of oxygen. But I was, after I went to hospital, and the medical personnel recommended that I change place. They changed me to a better place.
Has your time in prison had an effect on you, physically or emotionally, or are you able to walk away from 2 years being imprisoned and just say, I'll pick up my life where I left it all?
No, I think it has in a number of ways, but the most important one is it has increased significantly my commitment to the democratization process in Ethiopia. I have seen so much injustice being in prison. I believe it would be unacceptable for anyone with conscience to live in that country without fighting for justice and democracy.
But you're an economist, and you must be aware of the problems that Ethiopia faces. It was pretty much destroyed by the Mengistu government, which brought a very poorly thought out socialism to the country. And there was there was constant warfare during the time it was in power. Aren't transitions difficult under the best of circumstances?
Well, transitions are difficult under the best of circumstances, you are right. And I don't know how long one considers a transition period. I mean, we're talking about 15 years. We're talking about two previous elections that are similar to the Soviet-type elections that have no meaning in terms of improving the political process. That's why the pressure was put to bear on the government, both by local forces and international forces, to open up a little bit the political process. That's why they opened up. But once you open up to reverse the situation and take the country back to the dark ages is really what is very unfortunate and what should not stand.
Well, when other countries have reneged on fair elections, as we saw in Myanmar, for example, the rest of the world has imposed sanctions. But Ethiopia has not been punished, has it?
Well, that is what is interesting, isn't it? I mean, one of the problems with current international politics, as I see it, is that there seems to be a return to the Cold War type of thinking in foreign policy. The war on terror seems to replace communism as the main enemy, and anyone who, in one form or another, is fighting terrorism or claims to fight terrorism would be a friend.
So Ethiopia really enhanced its image with the United States when exactly, it participated in the invasion of Somalia.
Exactly. As you remember, immediately following our arrest and the repression of the democratic movement, Ethiopia invaded Somalia. And the human rights violations that we see in Somalia, which is similar to what we have seen in Ethiopia, is considered probably by the West as a payment for the service that the Ethiopian government is delivering. But of course, the most unfortunate thing with this kind of thing is that this can only give you a temporary relief. I mean, you cannot fight terrorism with governments that terrorize their own people. I mean, at the end of the day, you create more enemies.
Do you think the African Union is ignoring this because it has so many other problems on its hands?
Well, you must understand, the African Union is a union of governments, and a union of governments that are not democratic, most of them are not democratic in themselves, so they are not about to fight for democracy, at least what we have seen. One of the most amazing things, in fact, what we saw during the election was the African Union was the only election observer that claimed the election to be free and fair. I mean, they sent observers who were not even observing and declared it. And that's partly because it's a club, in a way. I mean, it's a club of, undemocratic governments, mostly. So well, they're not going to, it's a scratch my back, I will scratch yours. So
They tolerate Zimbabwe.
They tolerate Zimbabwe.
Mugabe.
You must understand, I mean, Mbeki was the first to go to receive the Nigerian, the newly elected Nigerian government, irrespective of the fact that it was a clearly, a stolen election. I mean, that's the unfortunate situation that Africa is in, and I think the West need to realize that the stability of the continent, the stability of the region, largely depends on the democratization of the region rather than just finding allies from dictators for the fight against terror.
Do you think you're in any danger?
Anyone who lives in an environment of repression, anyone who lives in a society where a fight for democracy is considered, anti-constitutional, irrespective of the fact that the constitution very clearly and explicitly states that that really the democracy is the political order. Anyone who lives in a society where the government has no moral qualms, anyone who lives in a society where the courts are nothing but an instrument of oppression, yes, you are always in danger.
And isn't Ethiopia also suffering from a brain drain? So many people left during the Mengistu dictatorship, the man they called the Butcher of Addis, recently convicted of genocide. And you left, so many others did. Most are still living outside of Ethiopia.
In droves. I mean, the situation is so sad that anyone who has any chance to get to secure a visa from a decent Western country is ready to leave now. I mean, that's, some would argue that there is a lot of economic reason behind it. But I would argue, in addition to the economic reason, there is this dread of living in an atmosphere of fear that is driving people out of their countries. I mean, if you provide an atmosphere of freedom, an atmosphere of liberty, then at least the fight to live a better life is in your own hands. I mean, in the environment that we're in, You can't think freely. You can't live freely. All your actions are considered possibly treasonous. So in that environment, I mean, how could one blame people leaving their countries?
And I'm assuming it isn't likely that Prime Minister Melis will be leaving office anytime soon.
Well, I mean,
you're a member of the opposition party, but is there any stronger opposition? Can Ethiopia afford to go through another civil war?
That's exactly what our argument is. I mean, what we're saying is, unless otherwise, we sit down and try to solve this political impasse in a civilized manner. Unless otherwise, we sit and dialogue and create a political institutions that would serve the purpose that the purpose that you need to establish a democratic politics. If we continue with this belligerent attitude that the government is showing, then political dialogue would be absent, and quickly people who are disgruntled by what's going on, and there are a lot that have already raised arms fighting against this government, then the political impasse would be settled by force again, which would be the most unfortunate thing that would happen to Ethiopia, because in such an environment the future is not clear, and the damage that would be done to the economy, to the psychology of the people would take years to heal. That's why we call upon the government to sit down and restart the negotiation to ensure that there is a government that is elected by the public in a free and fair election. That's all the opposition is asking for. We have no other demands. If the government wins in a free election, then all power to them. But you cannot continue to usurp state power by force and try to maintain it by force, because it will break. It will break sooner or later, either by unified public action or by force, as others are trying to do.
Dr. Berhanu Nega is an economist and a leading member of the CUD, Ethiopia's main opposition party, and he's been my guest today on Underreported. By the way, he will also be giving a talk tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the New School for Social Research. It's in the Swayduk Auditorium at 65 Fifth Avenue. That's between 13th and 14th Streets. It's free and open to the public. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. And I know it's a little bit in advance, but can I wish you a Happy New Year? It's also the turn of the millennium.
Yes, it is. We'll celebrate our millennium in 3-4 days. Unfortunately, I wish we have celebrated this millennium with the hope that something better is coming. But unfortunately, currently, the conflicting situation in the country is getting worse. And, hopefully, sometime soon we'll settle our problems.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mm-hmm.